Friends, will you pray with me? Oh, God. God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight. For you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So the book of Ruth is a story about a lot of things. It's about grief and joy, identity and belonging, how we make family when everything falls apart. It's a book about a lot of things, but mostly it's a story about humans who, despite everything, make the choice to live like love is in charge. Because love sets this whole thing up. Now, the truth, insofar as this story contains its own internal truth, is that writ large across the land, love wasn't in charge. The story of Ruth happened at the time when judges ruled and there was a famine in the land. The judges were raised up not just because of the famine, but because the people of God did not have a trustworthy government. There was no king in Israel, and the people did what was right in their own eyes. And what was right in their own eyes was evil in the sight of God. The book of Judges tells the story of the downward spiral of an unfaithful nation, a group of people who worshiped other gods, and because of that, were given over to conquest and to suffering. That's the social-political context of the characters in this story. The social-political context of the authors of this story is that they were making an argument in favor of marriage across ethnic differences in a world where a woman's legal value was less like a human and more like a field. But that's probably a sermon for another day. Because today we're talking about living like love is in charge. In a land without easy access to healthy food, in a nation where people with power are doing what is right in their own eyes and evil in the eyes of God. Living like love is in charge starts with Ruth and Naomi. It's all over this book, love. An affectionate commitment to making unselfish choices for the sake of another. It's the framework through which almost every decision is made, but it starts with Ruth and Naomi. Naomi is Ruth's mother-in-law, an Israelite who, with her husband Elimelech, left their land and their people and moved to Moab. Their sons grew up and married local girls, Orpah and Ruth. And then Elimelech and his sons died, leaving Naomi and Orpah and Ruth grief-stricken and alone. When I say alone, I mean more alone than we might think. In the same way that the authors of this story lived in a world with a legal framework that thought about women and fields in the same way, within the universe of our story, as widows without close male family members, Ruth and Naomi and Orpah had no identity, no safe place in society, no people to whom they could belong. The law kind of provided for widows. Widows in a framework where women in fields are roughly the same. If Elimelech had a brother, the law would allow Naomi to marry that brother and to bear sons, who would then count as Elimelech's for the sake of inheritance. Those sons, when they came of age, would then marry Orpah and Ruth, and through those marriages, the women would be grafted back into Elimelech's family tree. If you're sitting here with a little bit of furrowed eyebrows thinking about the likelihood that a perhaps non-existent brother could marry Naomi and that together they could produce two sons who could non-creepily marry people who are already adults, then 10 points to Ravenclaw because you have figured out the problem. You've also identified the first part of our story where people live like love is in charge. Because Ruth's figured out the problem too. There's likely no brother. There will likely be no children. She's past the age of childbearing and can, by all sensible rubrics, offer her daughters-in-law no familial protection. For Naomi, living like love is in charge, looks like sending her daughters-in-law away. She will return home to Judah alone, walking a strange path, traveling in danger. But she tries to send her girls back to their families. Well, that choice increases her risk. Her daughters will find refuge in their father's names and belonging with their own people. Orpah sees sense and agrees. Ruth refuses. Refuses with perhaps two of the best sentences ever composed. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Ruth, faced with the chance to grasp at safety and belonging for herself, or to choose the risky and uncertain path of traveling with her beloved mother-in-law down a strange road to a strange land, chooses Naomi. She lives like love is in charge, no matter the impact on her own life. Because she does this, because she acts out of love, she unknowingly ends up making an unlikely long shot into flourishing life for a whole family tree. Because it turns out a relative exists. He exists and he owns land that can nourish and sustain a family even in the midst of famine. This relative is named Boaz, and he lives like love is in charge too. Because it turns out love set this whole thing up. Living like love is in charge for Boaz means that even though there is a famine, Boaz is not just thinking about feeding himself. He looks out over his fields and ensures his harvesters are leaving grain behind for the gleaners. Gleaning was a practice built for people without belonging. In Leviticus and again in Deuteronomy, God commands that their people leave part of their harvest behind so that the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow might still find a way to eat, though they are cut off from the protection of fathers and families. In a famine, a sensible person might keep all the grain for themselves, might forget the command of God and do what is right in their own eyes. A person living like love is in charge, though, would remember all the people who don't have a field to harvest and make sure that there's something left for them, too. It's just this practice, just this loving choice that brings Boaz into Ruth and Naomi's lives. For Ruth is a gleaner, and she catches his eye. And the rest, barring a deep dive into some Levitical law about women being roughly equivalent to fields, is history. Ruth and Boaz marry, and they have a son named Obed. He becomes Naomi and Elimelech's heir and brings a widow back into belonging in a way she could never have done alone. Obed brings Naomi back into the family. The family that will stretch all the way to become the line of David and then go further through the generations down to the birth of love incarnate, of Jesus himself. I wasn't lying when I said that love set the whole thing up. Loving choices, affectionate and unselfish choices made for the sake of another make this whole story work. Make the wildly unlikely not just possible, but real. Loving choices make an unlikely long shot into flourishing life for a whole family tree. A family tree that's our family tree too. For to follow Jesus is to be his sibling. And to be his sibling is to trace our ancestry back to Ruth and Obed. Back to Boaz and Naomi, back to humans living like love is in charge, even and perhaps especially when in a land with no easy access to clean food, in a nation where people with power are doing what is right in their own sight and evil in the eyes of God. problems of the world fade out a little bit for the people we are bold to call our ancestors. Not because they are not real or urgent, but because they come second in a framework where love always comes first. When love comes before fear, it casts it out. And Ruth stays with Naomi. When love comes before selfishness, it casts it out. And Boaz leaves grain in his fields. Living like love is in charge means loving anyway. No matter the harshness of the world or the unlikelihood of the long shot outcome. Love is its own end for these humans. And when love calls the shots, love sets up better outcomes than we could ever imagine. The hungry are fed despite a famine. Widows become mothers beyond the limits of a womb. When love is in charge, the possibility opens up for everyone to find a family. For everyone to look up and discover they belong after all. Thanks be to God, the one who is love, for setting this whole thing up.